Sojourn Shelter and Services is a not-for-profit. We've been incorporated since 1975, so we've been around for 42 years. What we do is we provide shelter. We have a 32-bed shelter for victims that are both adults and children of domestic violence. We also provide court advocacy services. So last year we helped out with about 1,800 orders of protection. And then we do crisis management and counseling and provided about 14,000 hours of that. So in essence, that's the main thing that we're trying to do is provide safe shelter and services to victims of domestic violence, help them build an independent lifestyle so that they can go out into the community and become independent and not have to return to the violent situations that they came from.
And when you talk about the hours spent in the 32 beds, for instance, that's an easy thing to look at as far as max capacity. Are those beds always full, for instance?
It's a good, bad problem to have. Unfortunately, we are full a lot in our domestic violence. It's job security, but unfortunately, there's always people searching for safe places to go. We have a lot of the kids who come in, along with the adults, but especially the kids who say that this is the first night that they've actually got to sleep, you know, not being woke up by, you know, really scary fights or for fear of going in to check on mom in the morning and not knowing whether or not she'd be alive or dead. So we'll take anyone from anywhere. I mean, we had a victim that this year had vacated from the state of Washington who couldn't find safe shelter. The abuser kept tracking her down, and she made her way all the way to here. And we got her into shelter, provided her a 90-day stay here, and then helped her find, you know, permanent housing, helped her get into school, helped her establish, you know, her citizenship and get in any type of entitlement programs so that she could remain on her own. And now she's living safe in the Springfield community, so it's great.
Is that pretty common as far as success stories go? That's what you're aiming for, I'm assuming, is to get them where they can exist independently?
Definitely. One of the things that usually happens is, you know, domestic violence is all about power and control. So usually what happens is someone's trying to control your environment. So either they've not allowed the person to work, they've got them terminated from their employment, they're controlling every avenue and all the people involved in their life. So they've kind of alienated them from their friends and their family, anybody else that could quote unquote either help them get out of that situation or tell them, hey, that's not a good situation. So that's what we're doing, is trying to take those individuals, get them here, get them employment, get them childcare that's affordable, help them find, you know, permanent housing, help them find any type of entitlement programs or any other services. I mean, if they come here and, you know, they're really stressed, get them into our counseling program. Also, maybe if there's mental health issues, whatever it might be, we're trying to link them up with other resources in the community so that they can go out, move out, be independent, and not have to return to that, you know, that violent environment that they came from, because honestly, that's their only choice. A lot of them, you know, haven't had, you know, gainful employment. Some of them have, but it doesn't really matter what situation they've come from. We've got to help them create a life so that they don't have to return, because if not, we're just putting a Band-Aid on a problem and putting them back in the situation that they came from. Now, unfortunately, we find is that, you know, we either have really great success, you know, and someone identifies, yes, I need to make these changes, and they're ready for it. But what people don't understand is no one falls in love with an abuser. They fall in love with a charismatic, loving man or woman, and that's the person they fall in love with. So you don't go into this thinking that, you know, oh, well, I'm going to jump in this really bad situation. It's something where you realize over time that this person is abusive, and they're, you know, whether it be physically or emotionally, mentally, sexually, financially, whatever it might be, and you have to then make a choice for yourself. It's all about self-determination. Someone has to acknowledge this is a bad situation and they don't want to return, because the national average is someone will leave 5 to 7 times before they'll ever truly leave and vacate the situation.
And so as things stand right now, for instance, you were just doing an interview with the Wall Street Journal as I came in, and I've heard you on Marketplace, which is also nationally broadcasted. I know you've been talking to a lot of people, and sounds like putting in a lot of overtime hours trying to make things keep going. Can you talk about the budget impasse and where that's left things and the kind of attention that's been accumulated because
Sure.
of that?
We found out not until mid-December that we were left out of the stopgap budget. We entered into contract with the Department of Human Services July 1st of 2016. So up until that point, we thought we were in the stopgap budget. We were getting our funding. It was just delayed. And we understood that. And we could, you know, delve into some, you know, reserve refund, you know, resources and keep ourselves afloat. Unfortunately, when we found out mid-December about that, we were kind of blindsided. We had no clue. So therefore, we haven't gotten any funding since June of 2016 from the state. So we're about $400,000 below in payments. Unfortunately, for the situation that we're in, we aren't services that are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. We're a 24-hour program and shelter, 24-hour hotline. So we have to have someone here manning our building, manning our phone at all point in time. So we've streamlined everything we can to the point of we don't really have anything to cut back on. And so that's where we're faced. And the community's been great with providing us like laundry detergent and food and personal hygiene items and all of those types of items, toilet paper, paper towels that they can provide. But unfortunately, we have staff to pay. We have utilities to pay, you know, phone. I mean, there's certain things we can't eliminate. So we don't really know where we go from here. And the other thing about our staff that makes them, you know, kind of special is that we can't just hire just anyone. They have to go through a mandated 40-hour training through the state, and then they have to do 150 hours on the job, and then they have to work with our seasoned staff. So by the time they get done, we've invested about 5 months into that staff member to have them fully trained before they can ever provide services on their own. So if we eliminate staff, we can't just walk out and hire someone back in a quick hurry to provide services. So it's really put us at a, I guess, at a really awkward, you know, situation where we don't know exactly what to do, because if we cut funding or we don't spend all the money that we've been told that we have a contract and we've been awarded that contract, then when the money, or if the money does come through, then we would have that money taken away from us. And not only this year, but for every year after that. I mean, that's how kind of grants work, is usually if they see you, oh, well, you didn't spend that money this year, so we'll cut you next year and every year after that.
And so what measures have been taken so far to make do without the money coming from the state?
Well, one of the main things we first did is we eliminated any type of position that we could. So we had a maintenance positions, and we got rid of those. So we have lots of husbands doing extra honey-do list. We have lots of friends that were calling in, hey, can you fix this drywall repair? We need to fix this light ballast. And anything like that that we can do, we went forward and removed that right away. We have some part-time positions that we haven't filled whenever they've left, or we moved some staff around just to have limited staff that we really need to cover just the 24 hours. Other than that, we've just tried to save a lot of money on supplies and those types of things. So we're buying less food, we're buying less toilet paper, those types of things, calling on the community to do that. But like I said, you get to a certain point where there's nothing left to eliminate. I mean, we already worked on a very streamlined budget pretty much the entire time that we've existed. There's no fluff to cut.
And how many staff members would you say you've lost?
Right now there's probably about 5 positions that aren't filled.
Where else is funding coming from besides the state?
We do have some federal grants. We also have some just general unrestricted grants that come from foundations and stuff like that. United Way of Central Illinois is a great funder. We also have like the Rotary South, who provides us some funding. We have had, you know, different grants that have helped us with food and stuff in the past. And so we're just looking for all of those little small grants that can help us. But unfortunately, the Department of Human Services provides 43% of our budget. So that's a big gap to make up.
And there's been, as you've been mentioning, help from the community. There was a fundraiser over the weekend for Tammy Gomez Vasquez, who was killed by a boyfriend, and her friends and family decided to donate the funds they were able to raise to the Sojourn Shelter. But as you've said, kind of at the end of the day, fundraisers and food and donations like that aren't going to keep this place afloat by themselves. Is that right?
They aren't. Now, they did have quite a bit of money that came in along with a lot of some in-kind items. So, I mean, that will help, but $5,000 is still a huge chunk away from $400,000. So, I mean, every bit helps, and that's what we keep telling everybody. I mean, anything that someone can provide, I mean, we are grateful for, and we welcome, and we really appreciate. But we're not talking like we have a $10,000 gap to fill. We have a hellacious gap to fill at this point. We really just don't know where to go from here. Already, we've seen domestic violence providers across the state already close. I know there's a whole slew of them that are looking, you know, at the end of this fiscal year being their end if something doesn't happen quickly. One of the bad things, I guess, or difficult things is that we do have some resources that are coming through, like some of our federal funds. So if you asked us, you know, where do you see us in the future? Well, we do have some funding. So our agency would have to change. We would provide some of our services, but there's a lot of services we couldn't provide. And one of the major detriments would be a large portion of the funding that we use to have our shelter is provided by the Department of Human Services. Without that, we may not have a 32-bed shelter for the first time in 42 years.
And I'm sure some of the people you're helping are aware of the budget situation and adding uncertainty to a lot of the time they're already probably having some uncertainty in their personal lives. Have you seen what's going on with the budget impact the way people feel about their future?
I think just in general, I mean, if you think about it, everyone across the state is being impacted, whether you have a state employee who is not spending as much money on a vehicle because they don't know if they're going to have a job, or you have someone who's, you know, not spending this disposable amount of income on something else. I mean, everyone is being impacted in some way or another. When we have other agencies shut down who might be providing mental health services, when we have someone come to us because of a domestic violence situation, we are not mental health workers. We are not, you know, ready to provide those services. And for someone to be looking for them and to have nowhere to send them to or to refer them to, it really creates just a huge problem. I mean, it's a holistic approach that we have to look at. It's not about, you know, putting a Band-Aid on something. If we do that and we're not all working together, in the long run, it's going to end up costing us more financially across the state to try to, like, put tape over, you know, cracks and things. I mean, we need to all work together, because our thing is not to just provide them a place to sleep and send them back to that violent situation so then the cops are being called out and utilizing more resources. They're being beat up in their homes and sent to the ER, which they're not going to pay for those bills, so that's then put back on taxpayers and everyone else. Our thing is to build them an independent lifestyle so that they don't have to return there. And if they're not, then guess what? They become successful members of the community who go out and purchase things, who provide, you know, tax money, and who are working and all of those things. So it's either a solution approach or it's a reactive, let's hurry up and slap a fix on it, which ends up costing our, you know, state and communities more money in the long run.
And as you mentioned, you're not mental health providers. There's other places, service mm-hmm. providers, that you're going to be passing the people you're helping. You're going to direct them to those places. Have you seen those options lessened?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's already fewer resources out there. And so where do you turn them to? So maybe, okay, so let's say some doctor's offices are closing down, or they're not taking patients that have, you know, a medical card. Well, then guess what? They're going to the ER. Guess what? The ER is a lot more expensive, and it's, you know, they're still not going to pay the bills. You know, it's going to be passed on to taxpayers. So what I'm saying is it's a costly, pervasive problem in our, you know, society. And we've all got to work together to make it better. And that's where we're sitting right now. I mean, cutting things and not having a budget, I mean, let's look at it realistically. We're in the hole further than we were when we had a budget. So if we had just taken an approach to know that we need to work hard and we all need to work together and we need to find solutions, we need to find more revenue sources, we need to find ways to definitely make some cuts, smart choices, but you can't fix a problem in 1 year that has been around for decades.